All right. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Brooke. Thank you, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Craig. Honor and privilege to be here again this week with you, getting into some of the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, giving me some purpose to my day. As usual, I appreciate it. Just thinking about a quick fun fact. First of all, when it comes to traditions, we're not limited to AA Comes of Age, although it's a great book. We have the back of the big book. We have a tradition. We have many of the pamphlets. We have local literature, and then we also have Language of the Heart, which I'm sure this district has gotten into before. Just felt like saying that. But I remembered a stat. I don't know why I was thinking of this, but I remember a stat. This stat's several years old, but the percentages are still going to be about the same if my memory serves me correctly. I've been reading budgets, since probably 1998, but we sell about 500,000 big books a year, and we only sell about 10,000 AA Comes of Age. Now, I don't want to just create an either or fallacy and just be like, oh my God, like nobody buys AA Comes of Age. Like, of course we should have way more big books. Like, I just making sure we're clear. We're trying to carry the message that is where our 12 steps of recovery is located. That is, obviously going to be our bestseller. We're getting those inside different institutions and getting them to professionals. And then, of course, getting them to our local groups, districts, intergroup, central offices, blah, blah, blah. But it still tells a story. If there's 500,000 big books being sold and only 10,000 AA Comes of Age, it tells a story. I'm going to tell you something really quick, and I'm going a little off script here, but there's 3,500 districts in the U.S. and Canada. Now imagine if we supplied our district committee members, not just the DCM, but the actual members of the district committee, with the book Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, and then we put one in our local library. That in itself would explode compared to 10,000. Just to sort of create some imagery about where our organization's at. So if we're not reading about our history, if we're not studying our history, if we're not informing ourselves of our principles, if we don't know where we came from, who we are, what we do, what we don't do, then we're going to keep getting what we get. Just some food for thought. I'm not just throwing a dart on the board. This is for real. But this isn't limited to every single district. Nobody reads the book. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying there's a lot of us that aren't even familiar with this. My ideal, now I know I'm a little radical. When I go to the international convention and there's only 60,000 people there, I'm disappointed. I'm very disappointed. I understand it's expensive and I understand everybody can't go, but there's no reason we shouldn't have triple that. When I go to my local area convention and we have 1,000 people, I'm disappointed. Because we have 1,400 groups and we have over 30,000 members. I don't like it. On anniversary night, when there's 100 people there, I'm disappointed because there's several people celebrating and several people have family members. So I get it. I get it. Remember, though, that was a story that Bill went over with his spiritual advisor, Father Dallin, where he talked about spiritual dissatisfaction. And in being dissatisfied is where you find God's will, in my experience. And I'm dissatisfied that we're not reading this book. That's an opinion on an inside issue, by the way. Today's tradition is the 10th tradition. As we know, for those of you who join me each week, I'm going to read the long and the short form of the tradition just to illustrate how much more explicit the long form is, and then share from there. And then obviously we'll get into to the book AA Comes of Age, and we'll start on page 123. The short form of Tradition 10 says, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. When we're going through the steps, especially those of us who've been through it and we're familiar with it, we look at the 10th step and we understand that it has basically the first 9 steps built into it. Kind of something similar here when we look at the 10th tradition. you could see all, you could see everything in here. The informed group conscience, the common welfare, what an A group is, you know, consultation, primary purpose, especially tradition six, et cetera, et cetera. So if we were to go around the room, which obviously we're not going to, we don't have time and it's not the format, but if we were to go around the room and say, what do we think the number one outside issue is that hits our groups all the time? And, you know, depending where you live right now, and maybe during COVID, it was COVID. Maybe during presidential elections, it was politics. Maybe when there was a certain discussion going on around your region with respect to the Lord's prayers, religion. And we can go on and on and on. And there's many versions of outside issues, which we can get to in a minute. But for me, the number one outside issue that has been here since the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and is still the number one outside issue, no matter what, is drugs. Drugs are an outside issue. Very simple. We had one of our, I still don't know to this day, which is a good thing, whether this individual, and since this is being recorded, I'm not going to actually say the author's name, but whether he is a A member or not. And I've actually heard some people say he is an A member, some people isn't, but he's a historian. And for those of you who know what I'm talking about, you understand the person I'm talking about. That author, who also wrote some, not conference-approved books, but historical books, observing Alcoholics Anonymous, also wrote an article about how drugs are an outside issue. It's a very interesting perspective. It really has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Therefore, it's an outside issue. I want to read the long form real quick. No AA group or member, no AA group or member should ever, that's pretty strong, right? In such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. So again, it's repetitive, but to me, doesn't the long form always a lot more clear, or I should say 99% of the time a lot more clear, right? Because we could argue tradition two is shorter. But in general, the long form is more explicit, more clear, and it gives some direction. Kind of like in the sixth tradition where we're talking about cooperating but not affiliating. Here in the 10th tradition, it tells us that we oppose no one. That's very good to know. But we better know the previous traditions in order to understand what that means, because somebody will quote that and say that, you know, Jane with the food addiction, who's never had a drink in her life, we don't oppose her. She's welcome to be here. And again, and this is subject to your interpretation, I'm not the spokesperson of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm just sharing my experience with you. But when we understand what it means to be an AA member, when we understand what it means for someone to diagnose themselves, to qualify themselves as an alcoholic, then that's understood when we say we oppose no one. That, to me, is more like when we look at the 1940s, when there was large lists of things you couldn't be in order to enter an AA group. Or when you look at a short hair of a time past Pearl Harbor, we were writing letters to kick a Japanese woman out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's all of this history in Alcoholics Anonymous where it shows that we took opinions on outside issues. We had membership rules. We had things that you had to conform to. And like I've illustrated previously in Comes of Age, as we go through the chapters, like, always be careful of the subtle insanity. Again, service and recovery are not separate. Always connect the dots. We talk about the subtle insanity with respect to alcoholism. That applies to the traditions too. Because while we shouldn't make you conform openly to anything, we also subtly, within our hierarchies in AA, within our quote-unquote sponsorship lines in AA, we sort of make you conform. It's not my job to tell you how to dress. It's not my job to tell you what church to go to or to go to church at all. It's not my job to do any of that. And I think that's important. Now, groups have group consciences, and they suggest that you show up prepared to speak and stuff. I'm not knocking anybody for that. I'm talking about me forcing somebody to dress a certain way or to believe a certain thing or whatever. It's not what we do. So that's subtle insanity in my perspective, in my opinion, when we're connecting all of the dots. I really like how it's clear. It says no A group or member. Now, the interesting thing is we have to know what we're talking about, right? Just like when we are brand new to AA and someone says, we're not organized. You always hear somebody say, what do we have a secretary for? What are we taking notes for? We're not organized. Well, that's not what they mean. Of course, we need to be organized, but we're not organized in the conventional sense. We're not a government. You know what I mean? We're not a corporation, et cetera, et cetera. But we certainly want to make sure we know where the archives are, right? Which, by the way, is one of the most, speaking of outside issues, is one of the most underrated roles in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, just historically, when you find a country lose all of its history, that's when the country starts to deteriorate. And I'm not talking politics. I'm saying human history has showed us that. So when we start to forget who we are, which we do, or we don't know who we are, then we start to fall apart. I love this little leaflet here that my old area, Area 44, produces. Area 44 is northern New Jersey. It's the first 10 years of groups inside Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's funny because before, which it illustrates here, but then even after, I just happen to know the history there, but you know, there we had segregated groups even after the Civil Rights Movement. I mean, like, historically, it's important to know that. Sure, we don't bring up outside issues, but we're certainly sensitive to who we are. I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm leading that into me saying we can't automatically write something off because it's a outside issue in itself when we're talking about it inside. So, for example, if you are experiencing violence in your home group, or if you're experiencing racism in your home group, we don't say, oh, that's an outside issue. We absolutely address that. We absolutely talk about that. We absolutely try to heal from that. I'm not saying we go into long-winded political arguments, but if we can't create a safe environment for our fellows to recover, then what are we doing? It was really interesting. I was working at the office, the general service office, during the COVID times. And man, the phone calls, and I worked at the group services desk. So that was the role of group services. We would get so many, not only within the region, but especially with stuff with respect to the groups dealing with like a lot of this COVID drama. And, you know, I'll never forget the story of an individual who was really, really anti everything. Thought COVID was fake, thought wearing masks was ridiculous, didn't care what the laws were, none of that stuff. And that individual was entitled to their belief. The things I would hear every day about groups being divided and groups fighting, and I'm not going back there because of this, and we're splitting up, and we're going virtual or not going virtual. We're supposed to shelter in place, but we're in the newspaper because they caught us meeting in the garage, like blah, 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 blah. But here was this guy who was even wide open with me about how he thought COVID was absolute hoax. And then he's sharing how he goes to his home group and wears a mask. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to understand. Can you help me understand what you're... And he's like, well, yeah, I mean, I think COVID is a hoax, but it was the group conscience to wear a mask. And in order for us to meet at the facility, we had to wear a mask. And I love my group and I support my group, so I wore the mask. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. The moral of that story is what we're talking about here with respects to a lot of us got distracted around the COVID conversation. But there are some basic ideas. If you're paying rent at a facility where you're required to either mask or have a vaccine record or whatever, then you have to have that discussion. It's not an outside issue. You have to have the discussion. You want people to understand what the rules are in order to meet there. There's seven tradition funds on the line because you're paying rent. It's not about telling somebody they must be vaccinated and AA is taking an opinion on your political stance. In order for the group to meet there, they have to follow these. Now, the group has the option to say we don't want to meet here anymore or whatever version. I'm not taking either side here. I'm just trying to paint the picture that sometimes we have to have discussions about worldly matters, but we're doing it here. We are not taking a public opinion on something as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous or as an AA group. So we don't publish things as an AA group, taking opinions on outside issues. And then most of us, if we're not breaking our anonymity, which hopefully we're not, you're thinking about when you're working in committee work, whether it's going to the institutions or the prisons or public information, we need to make sure that we're not putting our opinion out there. You know? On outside issues is what I mean. And it brings us, I see you, Brooke, and it brings us to what we talked about. I mean, the fifth tradition is really a 3-second workshop. What's our primary purpose? To carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. What isn't our primary purpose? Everything else. Workshop is over. You know, but we get distracted by all of these other topics, all of these other topics. And then we need to be careful when we do that publicly. Brooke.
Okay. Our social gatherings, barbecues, campouts, ski days, etc., outside issues, ? What do they have to do with AA? Why do we spend seventh tradition money on these events?
It's a question that absolutely deserves more attention. Whoever's asking the question, that question deserves attention at your district, at your area, at your young person's committee. I will certainly answer it in my experience. But I guess what I'm trying to say is it's so important to have those discussions so everybody can kind of learn and come to a clear consensus. For me, I just never understood why we held the dance and then threw a meeting in there. And then behind that, we were selling some Red Bull and T-shirts and stickers. Like, that's just not my understanding of Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's so much more to discuss, too, than whether or not you agree with me. Or you think it is AA because there's a meeting. And I think it's not because there's more stuff to discuss. Like, you mentioned skiing. Like, have we considered, are we using the AA name, which we shouldn't publicly? Is there insurance issues if people are signing up and coming in through that committee? Like, again, I don't want to bore you to death here with that stuff, but there's so much of that stuff to discuss too before we even get down to whether or not this is quote unquote AA. But I will tell you, for me, I've been member of home groups, young people's committees, regional events, conventions, advisory councils, regional delegates committees, you name it, where we stuck to the principles. And we had a blast. We didn't need to fill that with anything else. We didn't need to make money by raising through raffle tickets. We didn't need to sell Red Bull in order to support us for the year. We didn't, like, all of those things. I just think we should be making decisions on AA principles first and then business decisions. I don't think we should be making decisions and then trying to squeeze the principles in there. And there's room, again, I'm going to keep saying this over and over again, even though I feel very confident and strong within my own experience, I'm still going to remind everybody, I'm just sharing my experience and in some cases my opinion, so you can have your own, you can explore that with your committee, whatever. But even so, I have yet to be convinced, whether you would like to or not, of how any of that has to do with our primary purpose, has to do with our spiritual idea of passing the basket. Has to do with why we're meeting, why we're gathering, what we're doing. You know, I've been to international conventions where there's literally 4 blocks worth of drunk junk. What does that have to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? The good news is it doesn't, because it's a bunch of alcoholics selling drunk. I mean, junk. But of course, we have to be careful, because when everyone in that community understands AA is coming to take over the city for that week, it's easily misinterpreted, if that makes sense. You can't just quote, it's not the letter of the law, when it wins you an argument. You also have to consider that on the back end of when people are watching you, what message are you carrying to them? And it goes back to, I know we're not on anonymity tonight, but it goes back to the same thing every time. Is it right or wrong if I post the number 7 on Facebook? Well, when you read clearly the Understanding Anonymity pamphlet, it's not just about protecting your own anonymity, it's about protecting your members' anonymity. And anonymity is all about equality. So if you expose them to breaking their anonymity, shame on you, in my opinion. Because you gotta know, you could deny that it's not a self-seeking proposition all you want. You could deny and make up some grand story about how you've helped 70,000 people by posting a number every year. And all of that might be true. But at what point do we have the discussion of how you're making people susceptible, which, by the way, most of them don't care. I understand that. But you're making it susceptible to them breaking their anonymity. Public controversy. That's the key word when we look at Tradition 10. When we turn to page 123, we think the future safety of Alcoholics Anonymous greatly depends upon Tradition 10. A's principle of no controversy at the public level. So again, remember, Tradition 10 is talking about the public level. It doesn't mean we can't have controversial discussions in the home group. I mean, again, I say this every week, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn from conflict. We grow from conflict. Our entire makeup and history is based on conflict. But having controversial public discussions of outside issues is the problem. The writers of A Comes of Age here talk about on page 123, so long as we don't argue these matters privately, it's a cinch we never shall argue them publicly. And we all do it. There's not one individual in these squares that hasn't tried to throw a quick political comment in by the dumpster, you know, or kind of gossip about what somebody's doing for work. You know, like, I mean, I could go on and on about ways that we've all, for lack of a better term, violated this. But remember, we forget the very premise of the big book sometimes. Because there's so many lives being saved. There's so many emotions. There's so many experiences. But it's very simple at its core. It's to develop a relationship with a higher power. That's it. The traditions have the same simplicity. All of this jargon is to create unity. And it's very hard to create unity when we're arguing Red Sox, Yankees, red state, blue state, you know, COVID positive, COVID negative, you know, fill in the blank. I'm just trying to cover everything here. Safety, I don't think, is an outside issue. Things that, you know, whether it's microaggressions or, like I said, racism or, sexism or any of that kind of stuff that happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is not an outside issue. It's something we need and should and could and do talk about. This is a spiritual kindergarten, in case anybody's forgotten. So nobody's coming in here with, you know, a perfect slate. In fact, many of us are here and having a hard time getting a clean slate even while we're here. So behavior is unacceptable, but it's understandable. But we can't grow from that if we don't have conversations. It's a thing we have some of the biggest, hardest time with as alcoholics: communication, we're either worried what someone's going to think or if they're going to hear us or we think we're better than or we're less than. And there's all these millions of roadblocks. But again, the traditions bring us to focus on the principles so we don't even have to worry about any of that. You should be able to bring up something at your group. Now, listen, if you would like to solve, let's say you lived in Manhattan and you would like to solve Manhattan's issue with gender equality, no, you shouldn't put that on the agenda. But if there are issues of the such arising within your group, absolutely that should go on the agenda and the group should have the opportunity to have that conversation inside and heal and grow. Also, what the group shouldn't be doing is handing out business cards or posting things on the church marquee and taking opinions on outside issues while they're doing that. Handing out business cards is not a problem. But if you're taking an opinion on an outside issue and handing them out, that's a problem. We've been putting bulletin boards up, church marquees up, and public information since the 50s. That's not the issue, as long as we're publishing the principles, not the personalities. So we are in public, but when we're in public, it's our principles that are published, not our personalities. But while we're in public, we shouldn't be taking opinions on outside issues, which tells you what? The only thing we should be sharing about in public is our experience, strength, and hope with respect to the primary purpose of AA. How to get a hold of us, what we do, what we don't do, et cetera, et cetera. I have at the bottom of page 123 written here, careful of self-righteousness. And I think back, and again, service and recovery are not separate. And I always think back to the chapter, how it works. I know some of you have read that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you have scoured the chapter, how it works. And you remember how many times self came up, self came up, self came up. And this is, it's normally when we find ourselves in a position of, you know, violating this tradition in my experience, there's some sort of self-righteousness, some sort of indignation. It says here, as by some deep instinct, we have known from the very beginning that no matter what the provocation, we must never publicly take sides as AAs in any fight, even a worthy one. We have no opinion, good or bad. When we were interviewed back in 2014, I believe it was, AWS, they were interviewed with respects to the movie that came out regarding 13-stepping and the murders that happened in California. There was also, not in this movie, but there was another murder with respects to a robbery in North Carolina. There was a lot of stuff going on. The General Service Board was being sued at the time for murder, like all this kind of stuff. We didn't have an opinion when the reporters came. Even when people were bad-mouthing us, even when people were, I don't know what the words are, but basically telling a story that we feel we could correct, we have no opinion. That's that individual's, you know, right to report, etc. Some people are bothered by that. They think there's nothing wrong with defending yourself, or they think you should clear your name, and I get that, and I understand that, and that's our instinct, and I definitely think we should do that if anything ever went to litigation, which it has. But think of how much arguing we would be doing with all the cult newspaper articles that get written about us, or with all the opinions that plastered across Facebook and Instagram about us. Or, I mean, I think it's much more effective to get involved in the district and the Public Information Committee and tell people who we are, what we do, and what we don't do. Put some Alcoholics Anonymous comes of age books and libraries along with big books and 12 and 12s. I think that's way more useful of the time than arguing with everybody about whether or not we're reading orange or white papers. You know what I mean? So it's, again, my experience, but it also keeps you, I got you, Brooke. It also keeps you, it keeps us from engaging in taking sides. Yes, Brooke.
Okay, it says, if a place like the YMCA is allowing us to use their facility for a meeting, do they have the right to make members sign in when they attend a meeting there? And if we did not sign in, we could not enter the meeting.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, the YMCA, I think the question is, does the group have the right to refuse to sign in. And I would say they don't, other than to no longer want to meet there. And this brings up a bigger question. This is why I love questions, because it's not even about what I think about the question. Here's what's more important. Helping educate groups on signing leases or being clear about where we want to be, where we want to meet, what our rent is, what the rules are before we even show up. Having an informed group conscience and discussion about wanting to meet there. Asking other groups at the district, have you ever met there? And when you have, what do you do? I've been to several meetings, whether it's in Tucson, Arizona, Manhattan, Newark, New Jersey, Connecticut, where you have to, I mean, I've been to one meeting in Boston where you're literally being filmed because the meeting was in the basement, not a basement, I don't know what you really call it, but it was in a bank and there was cameras on you. When you go into the prison to carry the message, you got to give them your social. They got to run a background check on you. When you go into certain neighborhoods, you absolutely got to sign in. They want to know who's coming in and out, especially because they have children going there. And some people feel that's a violation of their anonymity. And so you can choose not to sign in and not go to the meeting. But obviously, that's not the route we want, right? But it's not an anonymity issue when you're just signing in to be able to go to the facility. I mean, you could feel it is. That's fine. You could feel it's uncomfortable. But I'm just talking about the way we see anonymity, because anonymity, even though that's next week, again, that's with respects to in public. There's no press, radio, TV, or films with someone asking to sign in. A lot of the time, this was very important with COVID, so they could do, you know, tracing if someone got sick or whatever. And I don't think the answer, I don't want to get too deep here, but I don't think the answer is to put a fake name. You know what I mean? I think if the group would like to meet there, they should follow the rules. You know? But I understand. I understand the question. Any other questions? Okay. Others fell apart because of sheer self-righteousness while trying to force upon the rest of mankind some millennium of their own specification. I mean, imagine. Think about how turned off you as an individual, we as people, can be when somebody's talking about something unattractive. Now imagine if Alcoholics Anonymous was doing that, or an individual in the time of representing AA was doing that. What does that essentially do? That cuts through our effectiveness to carry the message. And that doesn't have anything to do with being fake. You as an individual can do whatever you need, but we stick to the primary purpose here because that's what we have in common. You and I both couldn't stop drinking. You and I both found the steps and have been freed from the obsession. It doesn't matter what team we like, what color we are, what neighborhood we're from, how many bank accounts we have, what car we drive, et cetera, at that point. Because A, we know we're nothing, left to our own devices anyway. But even if we were something, it's irrelevant with respects to having power over alcohol. And that's what we're doing here. That's what we're talking about here. But in your personal life, of course. When we turn to page 124, the second paragraph, let us reemphasize that this reluctance to fight one another or anybody else is not counted as some special virtue which makes us feel superior to other people. Nor does it mean that the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, now restored as citizens of the world, are going to back away from their individual responsibilities to act as they see in the right upon issues of our time. As AAs, we do not enter into public controversy because we know that our fellowship will perish if we do. I have an interesting question. You know how I'm radical, right? So let me just ask an interesting question, because I see a lot of head shaking, and I don't know if it's bobblehead night. Maybe they're not agreeing with me. Maybe it's just bobblehead night. But if you're agreeing, let's just take this statement, for example. If you're agreeing that as AAs, we do not enter into public controversy because we know that our fellowship will perish if we do, then what is our fellowship doing right now? Is it perishing? If we understand that anonymity is going to be the end of our organization. What are we doing right now? Oh, if you came here for the warm and fuzzies, you got the wrong guy. So let me just help you out. Let me help you out with something real quick. There was nothing more important than what my sponsor did for me in the first 44 pages. He helped me become hopeless. The greatest gift ever given to me was to help me understand my condition, because I had no hope until I became hopeless. When I was hopeless, then I wanted help. So what I hope to do when I talk about traditions, whether it's in this workshop or one-on-one with service sponsors or while reading this book, is to help us become convinced and hopeless to our current existence. You make your own determination. Again, if we are shaking our heads because we don't think we should be entering public controversy, but we're watching people do so. If you're shaking your heads because we think anonymity is relevant, but we're watching 90% of our friends on Facebook do as they wish. If we believe that we're going to perish and unity is not going to be long lasting. Now, I'm also not trying to paint a picture of the Grim Reaper here. There's a lot of good work in AA happening. People on the screen here love AA. People behind the scenes here do a lot of work. Just want to make sure helping us become convinced of hopelessness means we look at our ways, not necessarily that there's nothing here. But that's just, I know I'm radical, but that's what goes through my head. Because you know what? I watch it every day. I watch people put a name badge on who haven't earned it and talk down to fellow service workers. I watch it every day. Again, I'm not the warm and fuzzy guy. And this is sometimes why I don't like being recorded, because, you know, I don't have a bad thing to say about Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nothing I love more than it. I already know what it did to you. Everything I need to know about you is in the doctor's opinion, even if I never met you. I understand the power of this program. I love it, which is why I'm so serious about the direction that we're going as an organization. We can't hold each other accountable if we don't know our own principles. We can't debate and connect on our history if we haven't learned it. And we certainly can't admit we're wrong if we don't even understand what the inventory is. And then the age-old question is, whose fault is that? Well, I'm no longer a self-pity guy, but it's my fault. You could take responsibility if you'd like, but I'm owning. I need to do a better job. I need to be more compassionate with my sponsees. I need to take more phone calls. I need to carry the message more. I need to be more prepared. I need to do a better 11th step. That's what I need to do. I don't know what you need to do. Recovery from alcoholism is life itself to us, and we wish to preserve in full strength our means of survival. Again, the crowd goes wild at the assembly when we read that, but then when someone's speaking the truth, we call them arrogant and tell them to shut up. We want to applaud that recovery from alcoholism is life itself, and we wish to preserve in full strength our means of survival. Not that anyone in here would ever talk like that, but you know, it means the world to us, doesn't it? Sometimes bitter attacks have been directed against people suspected of mixed motives. Yet despite their din, our rows have never done AA a particle of harm. They were just part and parcel of learning to work and live together. Let it be noted, too, that they were almost always concerned with how to make AA more effective, how to do the most good for the most alcoholics. And here's the number one. I see your hand, Brooke. Here's the number one. Actually, I'll pause. I'll take the question, and then we'll go into the number one story you tell all the time that has to do with Tradition 10, which is written right here in AA's Comes of Age, and I get to that in a minute. What do you got, Brooke?
Okay. It says, can you please address speakers who give their full names when being recorded? My experience is that many of those end up online or on the internet.
Whoever asked that question really knows how to get me fired up. I mean, there's so much. And I got to try to calm down because I can't talk about self-righteousness and then act self-righteous, right? So, but with respect to the traditions and trying to be positive and unified, There's lots of things there, right? So, of course, here's what I see happen all the time. The chairperson of the convention comes up and reads the anonymity statement and asks that you please do not state your full name because it's being recorded. And sure enough, usually 99.9% of the time it's a circuit speaker. It's not a local person. Says their full name. Like, they don't even wait. It's almost like they're doing it on purpose, you know? Says their full name. So that's frustrating. I mean, I don't know. I don't know everything. Maybe the hearing aid was turned down. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe there was a fly in their soup. I don't know. But I don't want to just blame that person. Although I would hope that person... See, this gets to the whole thing I've been talking about the whole time. A, we should pay attention to who we're asking to speak. Because I can promise you anyone I'm asking to speak would never do that. I guarantee that. Guarantee it. However, I'm not accusing anyone or saying they're a less effective. I'm just making a point that we should be careful of who we're asking to speak. Number two, even if said person did violate anonymity and state their name, you need to make sure this is AA. I understand we have tapers and I'm friends with some tapers, some people that some of you probably know and great people, nothing wrong with them. It's not AA, but we hire them for a service. But if you have a convention committee or a young person's committee or whatever, make sure you set up the rules about how it's going to work with recording. And make sure you have the power with respect. And most of them, and by the way, I'm not trying to paint the picture that the tapers aren't going to work with you. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying make sure you understand that you can erase if someone breaks their anonymity. So even if, you know, somebody breaks their anonymity for whatever motive, whatever reason, we're not going to question it, right? The committee still has the opportunity to erase that, to go through the tape and make sure it's bona fide, for lack of a better term. So there's a lot there in that question. There's an individual working their own program. There's a committee taking their own inventory. And then there's a solution to a problem. If we have experience, we understand how to handle it. And then there's preventative maintenance. I know no one in this room has ever just did what they want and talked to their sponsor later. No one has ever done that in the room. I know that for a fact. So this probably won't make sense to anyone in here because I know everybody here preemptively communicates with their sponsor. Hey, I need some help. I need some guidance. They're not arrogant. I get it. I'm not either. But assuming we were arrogant at times, we have blind spots. And we don't understand all of those things that could be harmful to the bigger picture. And it's not just harmful when it makes it to the internet. It's harmful when the hotel staff is watching you. It's harmful when the Al-Anon member is visiting. It's harmful when you're bringing the governor, this is a true story, bringing the governor to their first Alcoholics Anonymous event and they're watching people scream obscenities during the reading of How It Works at a Young People's Convention. Like, there's so many things to discuss here. Which, I'll leave that one alone for now because Bob's getting the vice grips ready. But, so the next... So I have at the top of page 125, effectiveness. That's a very urgent word in my experience. Because it's not just about getting the job done. Remember, we agree on this. I just may need to remind you, or you may need to remind me, but there are lives on the line. Your life is on the line. My life is on the line. Joey's life at the home group is on the line. We understand that. This is a matter of serious concern, Alcoholics Anonymous. But we also have fun, right? But I don't want to just do the job. I want to do it effectively. And I have no shot at doing it effectively without a 10-step. I have no shot at doing it effectively without these traditions to help me connect with you. It's all about effectiveness. So on page 124 to 125, this is why we have traditions. I'm going to lull you to sleep here with a paragraph reading real quick. The Washingtonian Society, very historical. Is there anybody, just by a show of hands real quick, I know it's not, does anybody here not know the story of the Washingtonians? Okay, good, cool. So there's at least one in here that doesn't. Perfect. Check this out. The Washingtonian Society, a movement among alcoholics which started in Baltimore a century ago, almost discovered the answer to alcoholism. At first, the society was composed entirely of alcoholics trying to help one another. The early members saw that they should dedicate themselves to this sole aim. Soul, in my book, is circled and highlighted because it references the singleness of purpose we have in AA. The Washingtonians forgot about the sole aim. In many respects, the Washingtonians were akin to AA. Their membership passed the 500,000 mark. Think about that. Long before AA, there was over 500,000 people getting help from alcoholism. Let's see what happens. Had they stuck to their one goal, i.e., had they stuck to their primary purpose, they might have found the full answer. Instead, the Washingtonians permitted politicians and reformers, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic, to use the society for their own purposes. You're hearing traditions all over, outside issues you're hearing here. You're hearing personalities before principles. You're hearing a lack of consultation. The common welfare is disregarded. There is no informed group conscience. The primary purpose is not relevant. Singleness of purpose is not relevant. Anonymity in this, in respects of humility is not relevant. Abolition of slavery, for example, was a stormy political issue then. Soon, Washingtonian speakers violently and publicly took sides on this question. I have no doubt in my mind that is a very important topic, just not for Alcoholics Anonymous to cure. Maybe the society could have survived the abolition controversy, but it did not have a chance from the movement it determined to reform all America's drinking habits. Some of the Washingtonians became temperance crusaders. Here we go. Within a very few years, they had completely lost their effectiveness in helping alcoholics, and the society collapsed. I have a question. I know Brooke's taking questions, but I have a question, and you don't have to answer it. It's a rhetorical question. Have we lost our effectiveness? And I'm not trying to create a crusade here. I'm asking us an honest question. Do you feel you could recommend an AA group to anyone in whatever district you're in, and the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is going to be there? That might be the case sometimes. It might not. Are we fulfilling our role within the general service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous? Are we electing effective leaders? Are we being responsible with our money? Are we being transparent with our communication? The lesson to be learned from the Washingtonians was not overlooked by Alcoholics Anonymous. As we surveyed the wreck of that movement, early AA members resolved to keep our society out of public controversy. And it goes on to talk about how most of us love controversy and chaos, and that's true, especially the ones that sit in the back, really quiet. I mean, I'm just kidding. You could sit in the front and be just as chaotic. But it talks about survival. And I'll ask another question. Do you want to be a member of an AA group that survives, or do you want to be a member of an AA group that thrives? I mean, because I survived. Some of you know my story, and I don't need to know your story. I know you survived. If you're alcoholic like me, I don't care what you look like or where you're from. I don't even care if you were in the safest neighborhood in the world. You still had to survive alcoholism. I understand you. I identify with you. I know the pain, the shame, the embarrassment. I know everything that you've been through, and you know what I've been through. I get it. I love you. You love me. We get it. I don't know why we forget that, but I get it. But do you want to survive? Haven't we survived long enough? I want to thrive. I'm upset if only 10 newcomers come to my home group. It's not enough. I told you, I'm radical. I get it. But you and I both know there's 30 suffering. I got a few minutes here, and I guess I'll find a quick way to talk about, and I wish I made a little more time for this, with respect to AA being incorporated, so to speak. And when you read this part of the historical side of AA comes of age, I'm going to give you the summation in a minute or so, because that's all I have. But basically, the conclusion we came to is we can't have injunctions and fight and legalities and litigation every time somebody looks at a circle and a triangle. So we realize we can't incorporate the spiritual side of life. We certainly have a general service board with subsidiaries and affiliate corporations such as Grapevine and AWS. We need to function in the world, but we can't incorporate the spiritual side of life. And that's what they wrote on page 127. I got 1 minute here. When you look at bullet point 8 and 9, we believe that the spiritual faith and way of life cannot be incorporated. AA can and will survive so long as it remains a spiritual faith and a way of life open to all men and women who suffer from alcoholism. Such a simple statement. All men and women who suffer from alcoholism, yet we find a way to confuse that statement. I don't know. So again, I'm sorry I'm not warm and fuzzy. But I promise you, if you're uncomfortable, I'll help make you comfortable. You can call me anytime. I'm really good at it, believe it or not. Thanks for the opportunity to share on Tradition 10 tonight. I appreciate it.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.